Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Monday on the Savage Nation. Sam Cooke, Darling You Send Me. We have other picks for this Veterans Day. We're opening with this. I'll soon go to Blue Monday because I know it's a Blue Monday for everyone except federal workers who never have a Blue Monday because they really don't work. There's no such thing as a Blue Monday to a federal worker. So go to Blue Monday for everyone but the federal workers.
Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play. Here come Wednesday, I'm beat to my side.
All right, thanks, Fats. We're not near Wednesday. Here's some headlines for you that you won't see on Fox News. Here are some headlines you will not see at ABC, CBS, NBC. Or any of the other networks. Number one, idiots run U.S. Navy. Chinese sub penetrates all defenses, menaces our aircraft carrier. It came out of London. Now, I was aboard an aircraft carrier, and I was amazed at how they lectured us on how a U.S. nuclear submarine, the one I was on, the Stennis, could never be approached by an enemy, whether by air or by sea, because of the barriers of defense built up around that carrier. Well, lo and behold, here's the U.S. Navy floating the Kitty Hawk in the China Sea, surrounded by all of our support and defense ships. And guess what? A Chinese submarine pops up very close to our Kitty Hawk, and the schmucks who run the U.S. Navy are left with their jaws dropping. This all the while our idiot-in-chief, the head of the U.S. Navy, is in China with his pants down, bending over for the communist Chinese, inviting them aboard our ships, assuming they're going to reciprocate. Now, I don't know who's running anything anymore, but I suspect that idiots are running everything everywhere. I think idiots are running everything everywhere. Topic number two. I've been warning you about this since 1982. ADHD drugs stunt kids' growth. Drugs of no benefit to hyperactive children. It's a scam. They're drugging your boys. It's a conspiracy to kill a whole generation. I have written book after book on it. Read Healing Children Naturally and read all the new stories coming out confirming what I've always told you, okay? There's a new group out called Muslims Against Sharia. These are the good Muslims, unlike CAIR, who are basically Muslims against the truth. Muslims Against Sharia has put out a press release which says to educate Muslims about dangers presented by Islamic religious texts and why Islam must be reformed. Now, this is something you should print up. It's on michaelsavage.com. There's another important story from the LA Times. You ask yourself, why have the useful idiots of Hollywood like Sean Penn and the other morons gone and kissed the ring of Hugo Chavez? Answer, it's Hugo Chavez's criminal paradise. That's why. Apparently, it's the center for human trafficking, cocaine smuggling, marijuana smuggling. Apparently, President Hugo Chavez, who talks a good line, that bloated football head. In fact, he has converted Venezuela into a criminal paradise. If you don't believe me, read the article from the LA Times on michaelsavage.com. 1-800-449-8255. Now, over the weekend, I have a couple of other rock and roll songs that came to my mind. I played already You Send Me by Sam Cooke. Now let's go to Devil or Angel by the Clovers from 1955. Let's hear that one. I love this song as a kid. Loved it.
which one you are. I'd like to wake up and ride. Devil or angel, dear, whichever you are, I miss you. I miss you.
Thank you very much. See, I used to have devil or angel cufflinks. Actually, they weren't. They were the smiling and the frowning thespian cufflinks. Not lesbian, but thespian cufflinks. Of a smiling cufflink and a frowning cufflink. And I would sit in class, bored out of my gourd, and I would look at one cufflink after another. The happy face, then I turned the other sad face, happy face, sad. And that way I didn't have to pay attention to the teacher with the bad toilet water that gave me a migraine. That's how I got through school. I doodled, I wrote, I made up stories. It was like being in prison. School was always prison to me. And yet I stayed in it. This is the paradox of my life. I thought about it. You know, a lot of my childhood memories are coming back to me. I hated school. I hated it more than anything on earth. It was a jail. And yet, look at this, 2 master's degrees and a PhD. How could it be that a person who hated school wound up staying in school longer than anybody he knew? I don't know the answer to that one. I guess that I'm a complex person. I liked learning. I didn't like school. Let's put it to you that way. I hated school, but I loved learning. And when I finally got to graduate school, I could learn instead of being in school. I guess that's the answer. So it makes sense. That's all. There's another song I have for you. Mama Said There'd Be Days Like This by the Shirelles from 1961. Let's hear that one.
Mama
Fire the whole wad today.
Like
that's
this,
all. First 3 minutes.
Said,
Persian miniature. You get more in 3 minutes on my show than you get in 3 years on the others. Go ahead.
The day and everything was going fine. I met a little boy.
All right, not as good as You Send Me by Sam Cooke or Devil or Angel. It is, you know, the anniversary of, well, it isn't the anniversary of D-Day. It's Veterans Day. We owe them so much. Today I went down to the mall by bicycle. It's amazing what you could actually see in a mall if it's not one of these. Well, let's just say the one I go to. Let's put it to you that way. I have a knack. I see mothers with their young children. I see everything from the high to the low. And and it's amazing, this is even in a suburban mall, what you can learn if you're very observant. But since I'm a trained biologist and a trained naturalist, nothing passes my eye without intense scrutiny and intense understanding. So even in a mall, I can find life. What do I see today? I'm standing there on my bike, just watching, observing. Mainly it's, again, the children are off again doing nothing. They take the little Ritalin heads again, and no school. No school again. Everywhere I turn in Marin County, no school. Every day, no school. A teacher's education day, a cucumber on a condom day. Every day is another day for no school for the little children. I don't know what they're learning. I haven't any idea. But again, there they are. The rugrats are out with their mothers, and the mothers are feeding them with sugar. But in the midst of it, I see a man, a handsome man, black hair, 6'2", 6'3", no legs and one arm. And he's walking like a regular guy. What do I mean by no legs, no arm? The man is walking on the modern generation of prosthetic limbs and with a prosthetic left arm with like a hook hand. And I'm looking at the guy with awe that he's walking with confidence and walking as though nothing had happened to him. And he goes into a sporting goods store. So I couldn't believe what I was watching. So, you know, me being me, I followed him in like a stalker. I didn't know which store he went into. I said, wait a minute. He went down the mall, disappeared. I said, I bet he's going to Sporting Goods. Bingo. The detective was right again. There he was. And the guy's picking up a bicycle from a rack and walking out. Now, remember, he has 2 prosthetic legs and 1 prosthetic arm. And I said to myself, boy, this war is coming home. This war is coming home. 1-800-449-8255. I see that Al Gore is pulling the wool over the liberals' eyes again. He has joined a Silicon Valley venture capital firm, but not for the money, of course. No, he's doing it for the green and for the renewable energy. Sure, he's only doing it. He's not doing it for the money. He's doing it for the good of mankind. That is so good. It is so good to know that Al Gorleone, whose father made his fortune as, he wasn't chairman of Arm & Hammer's company, but he was president of the Occidental Coal Company. So Al Gore came from Senator Gore's family, and Senator Gore, when he retired, was paid off by Arm & Hammer with the presidency of the Occidental Coal Company presidency. And Al Gore inherited all the money from the Occidental Coal money, and then he comes out with this garbage that he suddenly missed the green. I guess it's his guilt. You know what I'm saying? That's all. San Diego, Robert, you're the first up on the Savage Nation on the issue. The big issue to me is this, the big issue of all the things I've talked about, is my headline on michaelsavage.com, idiots run the U.S. Navy, Chinese sub penetrates all defenses, menaces an aircraft carrier of ours. This is a huge story. You have no idea how big this is. You haven't any idea what this tells you about the schmucks running the U.S. military. San Diego, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I'm a retired submariner, and I spent 20 years on submarines, and that's one of the greatest fallacies that our Navy leadership has given us, is that those carrier battle groups and the aircraft carriers are invulnerable to submarines. No matter if it's an American nuclear submarine, a Chinese diesel submarine, a Russian diesel, our carriers are vulnerable to any submarine unless it makes a mistake. The only way that a submarine is going to be detected is if that submarine makes a mistake and allows itself to be counter-detected.
American military chiefs have been left dumbstruck by the undetected Chinese submarine popping up at the heart of a recent Pacific exercise and close to the vast USS Kitty Hawk, a 1,000-foot supercarrier with 4,500 personnel on board. By the time it surfaced, the 160-foot Sun-class diesel-electric attack submarine is understood to have sailed within viable range for launching torpedoes or missiles at the U.S. carrier. And the Americans had no idea China's fast-growing submarine fleet had reached such a level of sophistication or that it posed such a threat. How come they had no idea? I knew about it. How come they didn't know about it?
Michael, they know about it. It's just that they don't want people to, the leadership of the Navy since the World War II generation has been aviators. The aviators have ran the Navy since the post-World War II, and it's only in the last couple of years that submariners are finally starting to take more senior leadership of the Navy. You got to look at it. An aircraft carrier is a $5 billion investment. If they start letting the people know that these things are vulnerable, they're not going to get their budgets to build them. Michael, I've conducted dozens, if not hundreds, of exercises against carrier battle groups in my career. And unless we were told to fire a flare or come shallow and show our sail or our mast or antennas, we were not detected. I've conducted exercises against dozens of nuclear-powered carriers, and we've come up alongside of them and taken pictures of F-14s taking off. And
unbelievable. So it means that our carriers are useless. They're behemoths. They're 19th-century throwbacks.
Exactly. They're just like what the battleships were at the beginning of World War II. And right now, our carriers are they're great if they're out in the open ocean. But once you bring a carrier into a coastal area, into what they call now the littorials, with the super quiet Chinese diesel boats being built with German technology and the old Russian technology, those things are quiet. I mean, I can
isn't that it's frightening to me, because when I met the kids flying those F/A-18s. I saw the best and the brightest who are never seen on television. All we see are the junkies and the perverts and the scum-sucking liberal vermin that the media specializes in. They never show you the true heroes unless they're wounded and have no legs. Then they show you the military and call them our heroes. They never show you the heroes before they're wounded. But the point I'm making is, if we lose a ship like this, how many men are on an aircraft carrier, Robert?
If it's fully manned on a deployment, you're talking 5,000 to 6,000 people, including with the air.
Now, could you imagine what would happen to the national morale if an enemy sank an aircraft carrier and we lost 5,000 men and women, and our airplanes, and our nuclear material, and a nuclear reactor, and it went down because the morons who run the military don't know what they're doing? But the biggest disgrace here, Robert, is that the admiral, the chief admiral, whatever his name is, as recently as 3 weeks ago, was going to China and opening up all of our ships to the communist Chinese to come aboard and getting nothing in return. And I was screaming on this show saying, what are they thinking? The Chinese are laughing at them. Don't you agree with me?
Well, it sounds to me just like when Neville Chamberlain went over and shook Hitler's hand and said, peace is at hand. There's a lot of talk right now among a lot of retired people and even active duty people that are keeping it very quiet, that they're very worried about today's generation of leaders, whether it's our
political... Well, who is it? Admiral Mullen? Or he was bumped up because of his incompetence. Isn't he Supreme Allied Commander now? He's so incompetent they made him that?
Well, I retired 7-8 years ago, but there's a lot of talk...
All right. Well, all right. I mean, I see things from the outside that are shocking to me, that we invest all this money, and it looks to me like these ships are, like, vulnerable. I don't know what else to say. Thanks for the call. Now, if you think I'm making the story up, go on to michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
So
talking about the aircraft carrier thing, I don't have an aircraft carrier, but I have a 20-ton vessel of my own. And I went out yesterday to view the damage on the San Francisco Bay Bridge. It doesn't matter where you live. You probably read about it last week, which is an oil tanker went aground, well, hit the bridge in the fog, right? So naturally today, Boxer and Feinstein, the great environmentalists who probably never hiked a mountain or gone out on a boat, unless it's a U.S. Navy ship to celebrate some kind of grift, are screaming and yelling about this can't happen. And there is damage. There's ecological damage to the bay. There's oil slicks. I wanted to see the damage to the bridge pylon myself. So I drove about an hour with Teddy. It was great. I mean, it was a beautiful day. It was after the rain. It was cool and sunny the way I love it. I mean, San Francisco Bay in this time of year is so magnificent to be on the water. And I like going out alone. I have no music on. I don't use radar. I use line of vision, my own eyes. I don't like, you know, daytime. What's the point of being in the water? You ever see these guys with the electronics? Everything is, they're looking at a screen day and night. I go out this, I watch the birds, you know, for the hour I'm running over there. I love to watch the pelicans flying in a formation. And you see this millions of years of evolution, the way the flock of pelicans will move, going underneath the bridge, and they go in this beautiful, everything's just gorgeous, right? The cormorants. But I see the good people of the bay. They're out there with the equipment, and they're gathering the oil slicks. And it's interesting to watch because it's very important to do this. They're good people to protect the marine life and the water quality. I get over to the bridge, and I didn't know which pylon had been hit. Now, there's a moral to the story. I want you to hear it. It wasn't just the passive observance. I'm sorry I didn't have my camera because I would have put it up on the web. I go over, and I encircle two piers, and finally I saw where it was hit. Here's the interesting part. Now, remember, you're talking about a fully laden oil tanker, rams a bridge in dense fog, splits open, disperses oil, but the bridge isn't damaged. Why was the bridge not damaged? Because of the genius of the engineers who built the so-called bumpering system around the pylon. And it looked like it was made of wood and rubber. Now, think about this. The wood and rubber was torn to shreds right down to the concrete. It was ripped open, but there was no damage. It absorbed all the shock of the ship. Now, I'm not saying the ship hit it head on. I don't know what would have happened, but it tore a hole in the side of the ship. But think of the good part of this story. Is the geniuses called engineers in our country. Just think of that one.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So I viewed the damaged bridge pylon, and I'm telling you, you gotta respect the genius of our engineers. That's a really important point. It's easy to be negative about everything, as Feinstein and Boxer are naturally leaping on it. Like everybody wanted the tanker to run aground and spill oil in the bay. Only they didn't want it. I mean, stupid. We're all glad. You know, we're all glad that the bridge didn't fall down. Why don't you say the good news is that the bridge wasn't damaged because it was engineered properly, and because the bumpering system on the pylon was sheer genius. I don't know who developed it. I don't have any idea. No doubt it was a Muslim, according to a Muslim professor at Columbia University. All inventions of the last 500 years were by Muslims. So we'll have to look into that one. There's a TV writer's strike, which is very interesting, because I really didn't know that Jon Stewart was the putz that I always thought he was, or this man Colbert. They're inventions. They're puppets. It turns out that Jon Stewart and Colbert couldn't last a month or one Arbitron book in radio. They have nothing to say because they read scripts. You think Jon Stewart makes it up. You think this idiot Colbert makes it up. They're fabrications. Do you understand what I said? If it wasn't for the ugly guy in the back with the curly hair and the big glasses, they wouldn't say anything. They don't know what to say. And so consequently, they're puppets of sicko leftists who write for them. And this is the difficulty of radio and also the genius of radio. By the way, look at the comedians who have failed in talk radio. You've got that moron running for office in Minnesota, right? What's his name who failed in radio? The fat guy. Al Franken failed. Now you got Dennis Miller, who won't last three books. It's pathetic to listen to him. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but the guy is pathetic to listen to. He just talks about esoteric things to do with, I don't know, old movies. I don't understand this. And sports, and has a sidekick. That's not talk radio. What I do is talk radio. This is talk radio. I don't read anybody's script. It's amazing to me that TV writers' strike shows us that guys like Jon Stewart and Colbert are empty suits. They're nothing. They're gas bags. 1-800-449-8255. So what else happened over the weekend? Man with prosthetic legs, I told you already. Viewed the damaged bridge with Teddy. Told you that one already. Oh, yeah, last night I go to a Chinese restaurant. I know many of you like the stories, so I'm going to... I mean, these are real. You see, I'm a guy engaged, so there are real stories. I drive into the city, go to this Chinese restaurant. Now, for one, the parking is enough to give you indigestion if you get there, and it's terrible, just awful. That already gives you indigestion. There's no point in going. So I get there. I've eaten there for 20 years, and they still mistreat us. It's just that I don't know if it's the nature of the business. They don't like me. It's racism. I don't know what it is. I can't tell. I get in there. I order a number of dishes, and I'm meeting a friend. And they bring us immediately the pot stickers and the steamed dim sum within 5 minutes. I said, well, tonight's going to be different. Now I'm three beers into the meal, and there are no dishes. And everyone who came in after me is eating. Eight times I get up, where's the food? Then they bring it out, and the rice is at the end. It was a mess, okay, a nightmare. I'm never going there again. But wait, the best is yet to come. My friend John, who's a philosophy professor, shows up a few minutes late. And he comes and he says, I had to park in a driveway around the corner. I hope I don't get a ticket. So right away, that's double anxiety. I don't blame him. There's no parking. Then he runs out 5 minutes later. And he puts a note in his windshield which says, please don't tell me. Call my cell phone number if you want me to move. Sure enough, in the middle of the meal, ring, ring. Oh, I'll be right out. I'll be right out. So I go out with him because John is a philosophy professor and he's not street smart. I just had an instinct I better be with him. Sure enough, there's a crazed Russian in the street. He had parked not only in the guy's driveway, but right against the guy's bumper, and the Russian is insanely mad, screaming and yelling, you have no brains! No brains! No brains! No brains! Stupid, stupid, stupid brain! No brains! What, you have no brains? Why are you parking my car? And he's crazy. He's livid. Now, I know how to defuse street situations, and John, the philosophy professor, doesn't know anything about this kind of interchange. Everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. I'm trying to calm things down. I had four beers already. So I said to him, look, tell you what, just calm down. You have no brains. No. And he's screaming and yelling the Russian, no brains, stupid. And he's in everyone's face. So I said, this could escalate, turn very bad. You know, guns, knives. You don't know what's going to crazy relatives from the Ukraine could come out with tattoos from jail. You don't know where this is going to go. I'm trying to defuse it. So I'm saying to my friend, look, back the car up. I said, if there's any damage, I will pay you. I figured money talks, right? I wasn't saying it was anyone's fault. No brains. I don't care. Damage. No brains. And he's on and on with the no brains. I said, look, my friend is a philosophy professor. I don't care. No brains. Why on my car? So I said, John, back the car up. John backs the car up and there's no damage whatsoever. So the Russian gets down on his knees. He says, no brains. Stupid. No brains anyway. I don't care. Damage. No damage. Stupid. No brains. So I said, look, is there damage? If there's damage, I'll pay. No brains, stupid! Stupid man! I said, look, is there damage? And I'm saying, John, get in the car and get out of here. I'm going to take care of it. Go. And John doesn't go. John sits there like an idiot and starts in with the guy, I want to see you smile. I said, oh, my God. Now, the worst nightmare, you're telling an enraged Russian to smile? What does he think? This is a textbook in Marin County? He wants to see a smile out of an enraged Russian. He parked on his bumper. You know what that's like? That's like pulling out your private part and pressing it against his wife's jeans in the street. You know what I'm saying? All right, look. I understand people expose themselves when drunk in Russia, but you don't touch wife's pants with private part. You get killed for this. It's the equivalent of what are you parking against the guy's bumper for? It's bad enough to be in the driveway, but if you're going to park there, you don't put it on the guy's bumper. It was like a new car and little, and it looks like the guy worked all his life for his first new car. And to him, this was like a sexual encounter. It's like, all right, in my country, I know they get drunk and they pull it out, but they don't touch wife's pants. It was like on that level of insanity, the guy parked against his car. So I said, get out of here. And he's out of the car telling the guy, I want to see you smile. I figure a relative is going to come out and say, what you say to my uncle? Smile? In Russia, the worst insult, tell him to smile when he's angry. I mean, to me, it looked like it was going to blow up into World War III. So I said to him, get in the car and get out of here. No, not here. So again, telling the guy that he didn't mean it and he wants him to smile. So I said to him, and the guy's screaming, I don't understand America. American people, stupid. Stupid American people. So I said to him, I looked him in the eye and I said, but you like America, don't you? See, I knew how to turn the situation because I know in Russia, a little bit about the Russian mind, which is that you can hate the person, but if you're a guest in another person's country, you don't hate the country because in his country, you get killed for hating someone else's country or your own country. I mean, he knows from his own reversal that through history, if you say you hated Poland and there's a Polish man in the street drunk, he'll kill you. Or you see, you have to say, I hate you, but I like Poland. It's a strange kind of Slavic sense of humor that you have to understand how to defuse these things. He's stupid, friend, no brain. I hate Americans, stupid, don't understand them, but I love America. So it was like that kind of thing. Finally, it ended. So naturally, I'm never going to go back to that restaurant. That's all. You have to have been there. What I should have done is tape recorded this one. This would have been a beauty to have on tape recording. So let's see now. I viewed the damaged bridge. I will check that off. Russian street yelling match. Check that off. Man with prosthetic legs lifting a bicycle. I checked that one off. And now we're going to play Mama Said There'd Be Days Like This by the Shirelles again from 1961 in honor of the Savage Nation. Go ahead.
Mama said there'll be days like this. There'll be days like this. Mama said.
Mama said.
Doesn't move me. Kill it. Take it out of the archives. Play Devil or Angel. I want to see if that I still like
Devil
that.
Or Angel,
that I like. That's bump and grind.
Boom,
boom. Boom, 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 boom. This could help get you through a whole school year this point. It's a little slow by today's standards, I admit, unless you're on, I don't know, today, whatever they use. Blue? Oh, no, I guess they'd have to be on Prozac, a combination of Prozac and heroin to dance to this. What do you want to talk about? What is today? Why am I working? Get it off. Turn that off. Why am I working on Veterans Day? Look around you. There's people not working today. Government workers, bankers, they don't work. They never work. Religious people don't work. Nobody works today but me. I'm the only one working today. The roads are empty. How is everybody off on Veterans Day but me? I don't understand it. And you're going to miss all this good stuff. York, Pennsylvania, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I wanted to let you know that they underrated you at that conservative 100 conservative list on the Internet. That was so...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but it was compiled by British liberals. What would you expect?
Yeah, Giuliani, number one. That is hogwash. That is trash. The guy.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's absurd. Giuliani's not a conservative.
Dr. Savage, I love you. I love your entertainment. I hate to say this, but your depression isn't entertaining. I love it.
Well, I'll admit it. I go up and down. I'm all over the map. It depends upon what happens in my life or what the news is, you know. But the fact of the matter is it's a natural show. It's on a natural rhythm, and it's a natural show. It's an ebb and a flow. It's like the tides. They come in and they go out. Anyone who's consistent, to me, is like Lipton tea, consistent mediocrity. Thanks for the call. Mediocrity is the hobgoblin of little minds, and if that's what you want every day, well, go for it. You know, there's certain restaurants, for example, chain Italian restaurants. I go there because they're convenient and they're clean, but they're like, I said, they're like the Lipton tea of Italian restaurants. They're consistent mediocrity. Nothing's very good. Nothing's very bad. You don't really taste the food, but you don't get indigestion. It's pleasant, but it's not exciting. It's not boring. You know what I'm saying? That you want that, you can have it at these chain Italian restaurants. There's a place for that. That's all. Devil or angel? What else do I have for you? I have archival footage of Reagan on D-Day. I don't think so. British newsreel on D-Day. I don't think so. Oh, I got to correct a few things from last week. For you aficionados who never miss an installment of the Savage, shall I call it serial, the longest running serial, longer than the Lone Ranger itself. I don't know what installment this is. 14 years of it, X 300 days. 250, 300 days a year. That's like, I don't know how many segments is that already? 4,000? So let's say we're like 4,000 segments, serials. Last Friday, I interviewed a National Geographic reporter on the organ trade in China, where there's 12,000 organs removed a year from poor political prisoners, mainly, many of whom are Falun Gong Christians, just killed for their religion. Don't tell that to Dianne Feinstein. It might interfere with shopping carts going across the Sea of Friendship. But the fact that it remains is that at the end of it, the reporter, Linda Ling, was encouraging you to donate your organs, number one. Now, that's a personal choice. I don't do it. My license says do not, under any circumstance, remove my organs. And I'll tell you why. I'm totally opposed to it personally. A, for religious reasons. And B, because I don't want to be, if I'm lingering, I don't want a greedy hospital or doctor to knock me off just for my organs. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if they want right-wing organs anyway. I think they only want left-wing organs to transplant to create even more psychopathic left-wing clones. I'm not sure about that. But let's say they don't know my politics, and I'm wrecked in an auto accident, I'm hovering. A, religious reasons, and B, I don't believe in this at all. I don't want to be mutilated. You know, there's a very important thing that I tell you about that. So I'm against it personally. I should have made that note to you. Now I want to correct another thing. The day before, I interviewed the fellow who did the great World War II series on the war, who's the documentarian whose name I forget right now. I swear, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be rude, but I forgot his name. Ken Burns, okay. And I got the 7-disc set by complimentary, blah, blah, blah. Now, I got to tell you, I said it's a great set, and it is, on World War II. But I've watched 3 reels of it now, 3 discs. And I have to take exception to a few elements of it. There's too much emphasis on the Japanese internment camps and on how blacks were treated during World War II, and I'll tell you why. Yes, there were Japanese internment camps, and yes, blacks were treated as second-class citizens, which is bad, not nice. However, in the overall context of the fact that we were fighting fascism and real fascism, not soft fascism, but real concentration camp fascism, and had we lost that war, there would have been no freedoms for anyone. I think that there was a disproportionate amount of time invested in Ken Burns' documentary on those 2 issues. And the reason, of course, that there's so much emphasis on the Japanese internment camps and the fact that blacks were not treated equally during that period is because it was funded by PBS. I have to mention that. I didn't say it was offensive, but I really, it's too much already with it. Every reel, again, back to the internment camps, I'm sick of it. And every reel is the obligatory, a complaining guy who wasn't treated right in the shipyards. You know, maybe it happened and that was horrible, but the bigger problem was Adolf Hitler, number one, and Japanese imperialism, number two. And the boys who died in the sands, who came from the hometowns, the guys who got slaughtered in Italy and froze their behinds off in the trenches of World War II, and how they had to fight hand to hand, man to man. And had they not fought and died, we wouldn't be here having this conversation today on the Savage Nation. But what most of you don't know, particularly if you've not studied World War II, is that we almost lost that war. You know, the way the popular imagery is, oh, it was the greatest generation. They went over there and Eisenhower conquered them and blah, blah, blah. Are you kidding me? This was a thing by battle after battle, man after man. We almost lost World War II. I'm surprised we won it, by the way, when you consider the advancements of engineering in the Germans and what an advantage that they had, you know? Play Pantera now. Then I'm going to take a break. That's all. I want to hear Pantera. That's it. Come on, get the Pantera. Come on, I get the Pantera. I didn't say the Panchetta. It's the Pantera, not the Panchetta. And then go to break. I want to show you what the fake world you live in. The TV writers go on strike. You got this empty suit, Jon Stewart. You got Colbert. They go off the air. They're nothing but talking heads. They don't know what they're talking about. They can't interview even a writer. The same with that bucktooth moron Letterman and the other guy, Leno. They can't even interview anyone on the show because they don't have the wise guys in the back room with the big eyeglasses telling them how to sound smart. It's amazing to me what a synthetic universe television really is. And that's one of the reasons that radio is so unique, so successful, and why it's such a threat to the establishment. And that is because it comes from the inner heart and the inner mind. And if the inner heart and inner mind are pure and good and smart, believe me, we're making a big impact. And that's why we are really we're an endangered species. That's all I can tell you. But I had no idea that Letterman, I figured, was basically a ha-ha guy. Leno always looked like a waiter to me. But I thought Jon Stewart actually had a brain, not on the air. Colbert, I knew he was a fake. I took one look at him. I knew who was. He wasn't smart. I knew someone was writing the lines for him. Now, compare them to me, okay? I could put all of them in the palm of my hand in a room. I could make them all look like what they are, which is dunces. But I don't need to. The beauty is I don't need to. Don't you get it? WOR, New York. No, John on KNEW. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how you doing, Dr. Savage? This is a great honor to talk to you. The reason I was calling was the bridge issue. You know, the reason there's no damage to the bridge is because the way they used to make the bridges is not the way they're making them now, just like the engineers that are turning out now are not the engineers that we used to have.
But, Joe, let's look at the Bay Bridge. That pylon was laid in the 1930s, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that pylon. I mean, I've studied the creation of the Golden Gate and the Bay Bridge. That cement, I can't imagine how many cubic yards of cement went into that or how deep it goes down into the bedrock. But the fact of the matter is they overbuilt everything. And that was before computers, was it not, John?
Absolutely. And that bridge, the pylon, I believe, I've seen numbers. I think it goes down like 150 feet down into the water, into the bedrock.
But look, these guys, when America, by the way, still could produce geniuses, and they weren't hiring by affirmative action, they were hiring by brains. In other words, if you were the best engineer, you got the job. They didn't have to run through an EEOC handbook to see if they could hire a transvestite who was an incompetent moron to be the bridge engineer. The fact is that they hired the best and the brightest, and they built the best things. So they built the pylon, but how did they do it without computers? They used slide rules, right?
Exactly. Slide rules, and the computers weren't even, they weren't even a thing of the future. They weren't even in anyone's wild.
And look at the Golden Gate Bridge. They build a bridge like that, an engineering miracle like that, without computers. They build it in 3 years. How long would it take to build today with the government interference of red tape called lawsuits, EEOC, you didn't hire enough of this, enough of that, you didn't put enough transvestites on the overseeing board, and you didn't consult with the ACLU about worker safety? We're crippled. The lawyers have destroyed us.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Sunny day in the South China Sea. The USS Kitty Hawk was lolling to the high waves, certain she was protected by her surrounding craft of overflying aircraft. The men were relaxing. They were having their coffee. Some were on the rear deck having their cigarettes. America's dominance of the sea was sure. Then, the unexpected happened. The unexplained happened. A disaster unfolded. A disaster of the highest order. A Chinese submarine, which was supposedly unable to penetrate the United States fleet, popped up within torpedo range of the USS Kitty Hawk, menacing our aircraft carrier. The idiots running the U.S. Navy have buried the story. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I thought I'd give you a little Veterans Day thing, that's all. Just a little drama. You know, a little here, a little there from the Chinese restaurant. What do you want to talk about? Idiots run the U.S. Navy? What else is new? the Islamic supremacist group CAIR is trying to kill free speech under the guise of religious freedom. And I've asked you to email your representative, and I hope you've done so. I don't have any way of checking on you. I asked you to send your representative a one-line message. Investigate CAIR for manipulating the U.S. media. Protect our free speech. These enemies of freedom are saying that they're not against free speech. They're in favor of religious freedom. Well, thus far, I haven't received one letter supporting me from a Jewish group or a Christian group, which is really interesting since I spent the last 14 and a half years supporting Jewish and Christian freedoms of religion. But I found something out in life. I found it out a long time ago, and I'm no crybaby. I've got my own resources, number one, but here's what I discovered. Everyone's your friend until you need them. My mother used to say it to me over and over and over again. You know, she was a nice woman. She wasn't a businesswoman. And she had enough tragedy in her life to last for 100 people. But she would say to me over and over again, I guess you'll find out who your friends are when you need them. Because the fact of the matter is, you usually find out you have no friends. And that's the way you have to grow up. Because if you grow up learning to be self-sufficient and realizing that you're your own best friend, and you better be your own best friend, and you better learn, more importantly, how to defend yourself, because there'll be nobody there when you need them, you're a better man for it. That's all I can tell you. Not a letter from the Catholic League. And I must have defended the Catholic Church for 14 straight years. And then they got mad at me when I called Cardinal Mahoney a phony because he came out in favor of the illegal immigrants. Remember that? They condemned me for that. One word, and all of a sudden they weren't my friends anymore. All right, I defended the Pope, the World War II Pope. I defended the Catholics. I defended the Church against the molestation charges. I did everything I could for the Catholic people. But when I needed the Catholic establishment, they put a knife in my back. And thus far, the Jewish establishment, where I don't know if there is one, frankly, I haven't had one letter saying, Michael Savage supports religious freedom, we're on his side. Not one letter. But that's okay, because I've got the lawyers. That's what I really need right now, and I'm going to show these people what freedom of speech really means. When I get through with them, we'll find out who CAIR is and who funds them. And they'll find out that millions of Savage listeners are my greatest allies. We stopped. Remember what we stopped. Remember what we stopped. We, this audience, you and I, not the talking dunces on television, not the teleprompter readers on Fox News, Michael Savage and his Savage Nation stopped the Dubai ports deal despite all of the king's horses and all of the king's men. They couldn't put the Dubai ports deal together again, number one. We also stopped the illegal immigration amnesty bill put forward by that Kennedy and McCain group. And they did it in the dark of night. They tried to make it a fait accompli. We got onto it, and we blocked them through, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of emails. We stopped it. Oh, I'm not going to get the credit for it, but you know who did it. I did it, and you did it. I have had some victories on this show, and I'm telling you that I'm under assault right now, and I'm going to fight back with my audience. I need your emails, and you got to do what you got to do. You send a nice email to your representative. Investigate Carr, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, for manipulating the U.S. media and protect our free speech. That's all I want you to say. No threats, no nothing. That's all there is to it. And we're going to find one congressman with the guts and the brains to protect us from this front group. That's all I want to say right now. Now we'll move on. That's all. Now we'll move on. You want me to talk about Benazir Bhutto, who they're posing as a poor woman, a Democrat in Pakistan under attack by the evil Musharraf? Benazir Bhutto is a corrupt politician of the lowest order. Benazir Bhutto and her family and her feudal allies have tens of millions of dollars in Swiss and Dubai bank accounts. And now she's coming back like she's, oh, little old me, I simply want democracy. Don't fall for that one, what at all. The fact of the matter is, she was brought in at the wrongest time in history to undermine Musharraf, and she was brought in by the same dodos at Foggy Bottom in the State Department who have given us the disaster in the Balkans, where the Serbs have been stabbed in the back and the radical Islamists are thriving right now in Kosovo and in Bosnia, all because of the schmucks from Georgetown and Foggy Bottom. The same idiots brought back Benazir Bhutto, the most corrupt woman politician in the world, in my opinion. It was suicidal to do it. But you see, you're not going to read that anywhere, because the little men, the puppets in the media, have the storyline written for them by the men with curly hair and big eyeglasses from NYU. And they have written the story, which is Musharraf bad, dictatorship bad, military dictatorship bad, woman victim, woman needs help, woman needs democracy. What a bunch of garbage, but I know the truth. Now, unlike God who sees the truth but waits, I see the truth and I don't wait. I'm Michael Savage. Now play some rock and roll such as Darlin' You Send Me by Sam Cooke from 1957, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. Go ahead, please.
Darling, you send me. I know you send me. Darling, you send me.
I got through geometry on this song. Oh, what a trial that was. My God. Thank you. Now you can turn it. Thanks, Sam. Thank you, Sam. Sam's cook still around? I hope he is. God, no one lives forever. Nobody lives forever. Isn't it interesting? The writers, TV writers go on strike. Suddenly, Letterman doesn't know what to say. Dummy's home in his pajamas. Leno's home tinkering with his cars. Doesn't know what to say. Can't interview an author. Nothing. All of a sudden, the laugh lines are gone. The guy doesn't even know how to interview an author. Nothing. It's all scripted. And then, oh, wait a minute. Look at the real geniuses there. Like Colbert was going to run for the presidency. He didn't get that from me or anything. He's not on the air because he's a fake. He's a creation of the guys with curly hair and big eyeglasses from NYU. And what about the great Jon Stewart? Why, he did the Academy Awards. Doesn't know what to say. Brainless. Brainless from Queens. Doesn't know a word. Nothing. Can't interview anybody. Why? Because the smart boys from NYU aren't there to write the laugh lines for him. Isn't it amazing? But I'm here. The smartest people in the media are in talk radio. I'm telling you right now, the absolute wizards of the media are in talk radio, and the wizard of all wizards is me. I don't care whether you agree with me or not. I have to say it, because if I'm not for me, who will be? Of course, if I'm only for me, what am I? Then I'm Rush Limbaugh. So therefore, I am not just for me. You understand that? 1-800-449-8255 phone or michaelsavage.com website. Other stories of the day. Veterans of all stripes mark the day with parades, except for the anti-war scum, who should be carried off and thrown into an Islamic cell somewhere in Pakistan. They should be waterboarded for what they're doing to our troops. That's my opinion. You don't like it? Too bad. That's all. In a better time, they'd be dragged off by the civilians watching the veterans parade. They wouldn't have gotten with their throwing things at the military there. What do you want to talk about? Adam, WOR, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, hi. Adam from New Jersey. Listen, my parents' generation, World War II generation, they're still fighting World War II. And to them, somehow being Jewish is, they got it in their head somehow that if you don't have to be Jewish if you're a liberal Democrat, and you don't have to be Jewish and go to shul or church, I guess, for that matter, if you feel sorry for people of color, and you go on and on reading New York Times articles about those poor old people of color. Not that I'm doubting anything bad is happening to people, but it's just that it's sort of like the evil.
What you're saying is bleeding heart liberalism is a mental disorder. That's all you're saying in a nutshell. They don't even understand that radical Islam wants to kill all the Jews. They don't understand that. And they should be the strongest supporters of the war on terror. If any people on earth should be 100% conservative, it's the Jewish people. That's what you're really trying to say.
Yes, exactly. And when I talked to you last week, when I tried telling my uncle...
Well, look, let's not make this a Jewish issue. The fact of the matter is there are Italian liberals who don't get it. They don't understand what they're doing. And the worst of all liberals are Irish liberals. I once complained to an Irishman about liberalism, and he said, you haven't met a liberal till you met an Irish liberal. And you know what? He was right. Look at San Francisco. You've got some of the foggiest people in the world of the old Irish families here running the city. How do you explain Mayor Newsom, Eddie Toosom Newsom? He comes from a good upstanding Irish family. The father was a judge. The guy is clueless, has no idea what is really going around in the world around him. So don't think it's limited to your people, Adam.
Yeah.
That's all. Let's move on. My thumb hurts me already. My thumb. Now, someone's going to say, have you tried chiropractic? And I'll have to tell you the joke I made up. I didn't have a writer, by the way, when I said it. Unlike Jay Leno, I actually made it up on the spot. I said, my thumb is stuck. It hurts. It clicks when I move it. The guy calls me and says, have you tried chiropractic? I said, sir, I live in San Francisco. If I went into a chiropractor and said, my thumb hurts, they say, drop your pants. That was funny. I made it up on the spot. It was a throwaway joke. What would a writer have gotten for a line like that if they gave it to Letterman? Seen on Letterman last night. Everything's PR. They own everything. top and bottom, but what do I care? I'm not going to live forever. I have the audience I've always wanted. It's on in the time of day I want. I'm a late afternoon, early evening guy, always was. Did you know that I hate mornings? Hate them. I don't hate them in that regard. I don't get up and say, hate, hello, morning, I hate you. I don't do that. I'm just not ready to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. The dog wakes me up. He doesn't let me sleep. He's so tricky, Teddy. My 11-pound boy's getting fat. I got to tell you something. I pick him up now. My arm hurts. He went like from 9 to 11 pounds. I stuff him. I kill the other dog from overfeeding him. I can't help it. My mother was like that. She gave me three times a day, so I had 9 square meals a day. When I eat, I feed him, but I have to remember, Mike, he's 10 pounds roughly. That means he is approximately 1/16th your weight, which means that every morsel you're giving him, magnify it by 16 times to understand what you just gave him, a loaf of bread. You thought you just gave him a piece of bread, a snack, a little thing. You gave him a loaf of bread. So, and I don't add it up. I can't, because to me, he's a person-like being. So I'm eating. He wants to eat. I have this. I have a pizza. He has a piece of pizza. So I give him 16 slices of pizza. It's terrible. So the last dog, Snowy, at 11, everyone said, gas it, euthanize it. I couldn't do it to her. I couldn't gas Snowy. That's all. So the bald lawyer now at the other station copied the dog thing to him, put out a book. What else are they going to copy? He should get a uniform, the big war hero there, the great American on ABC. I love it. Every minute they're telling everyone's son to march off and get their legs shot off. But he's there selling books and peddling patriotism. You're all a great American if you call the schmuck that pinhead. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone. No, so I was going to tell you mornings. I was never an afternoon, a morning person. A radio station once offered me 15 years ago $1 million to do a morning show when I was local. I wouldn't do it. Never. I wouldn't do it. I said, I can't do a morning show. Impossible. Cannot do it. Cannot. I could do it in my sleep, by the way, but I don't want to. I need all day. I need to mow. I need to think. I need to read. I need to bicycle. I need to eat. I need to look. I need to watch. I need to think. I need to eat. Take a nap. Do a radio show. Then it's a natural. It's like it's part of my life that way. You understand that? So I'm really good where I am right now. And that's it. This is it forever till God silences me. When God wants me up there with my mother, helping him in the kitchen, cooking for him and the saints, I'll be there. Till then, I'll be here and I'll be right back. So here's a little story I'll make up for you. Norman Mailer died. Now, most of you never heard of him. I did, because I read him when I was young. He burst on the literary scene in 1948. I was a kid. I didn't read it then, called The Naked and the Dead. So my story of him goes like this, from The Naked and the Dead to The Naked Red. Now, that haiku tells you everything you need to know about Norman Mailer. The reason he became a towering writer is because he was a naked red, and they couldn't get enough of him. Now, here's a man who shot his wife. Here's a man who vouched for a stone-cold murderer, got him out of jail. The man came out and killed a waiter. And still the Reds at the New York Times, the LA Times, and the other literary establishmentarian areas couldn't get enough of this naked Red. That says it all. Now, who is Norman Mailer? As I said, he wrote The Naked and the Dead. This naked Red did. And he won the Pulitzer Prize for The Armies of the Night, which celebrated, again, the anti-war scum in the 1960s. He also won the National Book Award for The Executioner's Song, again glorifying a murderer. So right away, you already see why he was a towering writer. It's because he was a man for whom they had sympathy. Why? Because he had sympathy for the devil. So this naked red, Norman Mailer, founded the Village Voice. Village Voice is a left-wing rag, as you well know. Left-wing rag that specialized in anti-Americanism and promoting the free and easy use of drugs in particular. That's another reason they loved him. They do admit that in his life he was a prodigious drinker, drug taker, womanizer, would-be politician, a hipster existentialist, whatever that means. I guess that makes him sound cool. And most importantly, an anti-war protester. So now you understand why Norman Mailer, although he was really an average writer in so many ways, and very much like Hugo Chavez, glorified his status simply by shouting louder from the highest towers about how great he was. And incidentally, Hemingway sent back, this is something I remember, Hemingway sent back The Naked and the Dead in manuscript to him and said, unread. Incidentally, his hero was Hemingway, who was the real towering writer, who has fallen into absolute anonymity because he was the real McCoy, while this naked red was simply a marionette of the left. How's that for summary? I'm doing a little review here for you, which I showed you I can do on the Natch. I don't need any writers, unlike the folks in television who are now silent because the smart boys are off, the TV writers. And I'm reviewing the life of Norman Mailer, who was famous for The Naked and the Dead, and I call him the Naked Red. That's why he was famous. Yes, he was talented up to a point. He had a big mouth, and he was very colorful, and he was able to force his will upon others in New York City, no question about it. And he created a newspaper, The Village Voice, where he could push his malarkey. But let's not forget who Norman Mailer was. Let us not forget that he was bamboozled by a convict named Jack Henry Abbott. Jack Henry Abbott had sent him a few letters, and he was serving a long sentence in a Utah prison for forgery and for killing a fellow inmate. And then in 1977, this prisoner starts writing to the naked red, Norman Mailer. Mr. Mailer sees literary talent in the prisoner, and Mr. Mailer helps him publish them in a book. He then lobbies to get the prisoner, who's in jail now for killing a fellow inmate, amongst other things, he gets him paroled, right? Norman Mailer, the Naked Red. A few weeks after being released in June of 81, Mr. Abbott is suddenly a darling by this time in leftist literary circles, invited to the best homes, with the biggest degenerate women on pot you could ever imagine. He stabs a waiter to death in a restaurant. And Norman Mailer suddenly becomes a target of national outrage. But of course he was brought back from this position of national outrage because he owned all of the... Let's put it this way. I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. In this case, that's how it worked. And that should not be forgotten when writing about this otherwise self-promoter, ordinary man, big mouth, Norman Mailer, the Naked Red. If you care to comment upon my comments, if you read Norman Mailer and you think I'm being unfair to him, don't call me. Send it to Oscar De La Renta, 1-800-449-8255, KNEW, San Francisco, Forrest, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir, Dr. Savage. I would like to talk about how you have been condemned by liberals for just showing love for your nation, standing up for sovereignty and free speech, and I believe that you're a champion of free speech, and you were being condemned like Jesus was for just showing love for mankind, and you're a peaceful person. And
I'm not like you. Look, I don't want to be compared to Jesus in any way because of a number of reasons, not the least of which is the story ends pretty badly. So we'll put that one aside. But I hear your sympathy and support for me. I'm not concerned about the Council on American-Islamic Relations attacking me. I'm concerned about the fact that people in the media who claim to be conservatives and supportive of free speech have said nothing in my defense, and that the people are not on to the fact that most of them are simply self-promoters. Self-promoting jerks, by the way. Talentless, by and large. Thanks for the call. Eureka, California. Josh, topic, please go ahead.
Hey, Mike. I was just calling to say that I think the time that the writers, you know, signed their original agreements were the times of VHS. And they're not getting a fair cut out of all these new day, like, DVD series that come out on...
Oh, I'm not... Look, I have nothing to say about the writer's strike. I'm just showing you that Jon Stewart, David Letterman, Jet Leno, and the others, they're empty suits. Without the writers, they can't even do a show. That was my point.
I agree. I think they're standing on the right turns to get these people new negotiations that actually make sense. And
Josh, you called to push the writers, but you didn't hear a word I said. My point is not about the writers striking. The point is that the people they write for are idiots without them. Did you get that? They're dunces?
I agree. I don't care for them myself.
All right, well, that's all. That was the point. Now we can move on. What would you like me to do right now? You want to go to my website, ADA? You want to read the new article out? Drugs of no benefit to hyperactive children? Those of you who have been bamboozled by your local drug peddler with a medical degree, call a pediatrician. How about ADHD drugs stunt kids' growth? Would you like to see that story and give it to your drug dealer, your pediatrician? Would you like that or not? Atlanta, Georgia, Steve WSB, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I'm just another member of male in the South here, and I like the way you talk about us down here, and we're definitely for you 100%.
I know you are. I have a real affinity. Look, I could say Northeast or Northwest. You know, my audience is national, but there is an affinity I have somehow with Southeastern men. I don't know what it is. My accent is clearly New York, but my thinking resonates with you guys.
Definitely does. You'll find that most Southern men are very much patriotic men, and, you know, we're going to always back America. I listen to you every day going home from work, and it just makes me sick. I absolutely
It does. It's heartbreaking. Steven, let me tell you, Steve, I have these conversations with friends. We're heartsick over what Bush is doing to us, how he's moving to the left on a daily basis, how the Democrats are gaining control because the Republicans are non-existent. It's heartbreaking to see what's coming. I mean, if you love Spain, you don't have to go to Spain very soon because Spain is coming here, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Bush, he pretty much betrayed the people that put him in power.
I wouldn't disagree with that statement, and that's putting it mildly. Trying to push the Dubai ports deal out down our throats, taking the side of illegal aliens, trying to tell us that's patriotic. Rubbish. But, you know, the biggest problem I have with Bush is what he's done to the U.S. Marine Corps. How he lets these boys be persecuted is something that astonishes me. He calls himself a commander-in-chief. He goes to the hospitals on Veterans Day and puts out the crocodile tears. And yet he lets a guy like Chesani sit there and twist in the wind while false charges are leveled against him and he has to face a court-martial. Do you know the government has spent $21 million persecuting the U.S. Marines? Do you know that? Do you have any idea what this means? He's bankrupting U.S. Marine families while posing as a man who cares about the U.S. Marines. That's the biggest problem I have, Steve.
I agree with you. And the fact that none of them stand up to this Murtha running this big fat mouth all the time. Nobody stands up to this guy.
You're right. Now, Murtha should be put under the spotlight, not only for having stabbed the Marines in the back, but for being the biggest recipient of pork barrel spending in America today. He is King Pork. And you got to understand he's being rewarded for having stabbed the Marines in the back. You understand that? Thanks for the call. Now, we have a caller, Robert, on KNEW who likes Mailer. I typified Mailer about the Jack Abbott thing and called him a not great writer. But the fact of the matter is some of you think he was. Robert, for example, on KNEW, go ahead. You have your time. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael Savage. I used to talk to you when you were on Feral.
Well, for that was 15 years ago, sir. It's now a national show. You understand that?
You're big time. I'm very proud of you because a great star such as yourself.
Well, first of all, you have that wrong as well. I was never on that station. But go ahead.
Oh, well, anyway, I know you were in California at one time.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about Norm Mailer. I felt that he was one of the greatest writers of the 20th century. And
you can feel that, but even he himself admitted at the end he wasn't.
Well, he's very modest, as many of the famous...
No, come on. You can't. One thing you cannot say about Mailer is modest. He was never modest. He was a showman. But he said he was not a great writer. He was a competent writer. He was a great self-promoter. He was a tireless self-promoter. Which book of his would you consider a great book, Robert?
Excuse me?
Which of his books would you consider a great book?
The Naked and the Dead. I have never read it. I'm not a great big book reader.
You've never read it, but you think it's a great book? How can you say that, then?
Well, because it got such great publicity, and the talk shows on television were willing to take him on, and as I was growing up, he was kind of like my hero.
Sir, you just said he was a great writer when he himself said he wasn't. You also said you never read the book you claim is a great book. What sense does this make?
Well, because of the publicity he got from all the talk shows.
You're a little confused, but that's okay. It's California. You'd expect that. Now, one last note is that Mailer was drafted into the Army in 1944. He was sent to the Philippines, and he was a cook. And although he was a cook, he came out and wrote The Naked and Dead about a patrol. It was about a 13-man platoon fighting the Japanese on a Pacific atoll. And it became a bestseller because it was called The Naked. Remember, in those days, it was an uptight nation. So all you had to do was say The Naked, and the book sold a high number of copies. And The Dead, and that really got you over the top. But he pretended to be a combat veteran when, in fact, very few of you, even those of you who know something about him, do not realize that Norman Mailer was merely a cook in occupied Japan. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, it's amazing what you learn and what you have to talk about to get to the bottom of things. It doesn't mean he wasn't a crafty artist. He was. You got to be a crafty artist to be a cook in occupied Japan and make believe you're a combat veteran. You have talk show hosts who make believe they're war heroes, egging on Mrs. Smith's son to get his legs blown off, and then peddling your books. I mean, you talk about artistry. That's pretty good. We had a different word for it when I was in New York. It was called a different kind of artist than the type we're talking about here. So what do you want to talk about? Let's see. I gave you some good starts today. I viewed the damaged bridge, the Russian street yelling scene outside the Chinese restaurant, the man with the prosthetic leg and arm lifting a bicycle. I played You Send Me by Sam Cooke. I played Devil or Angel. I played Mama Said There'd Be Days Like This. I told you about the idiots running the United States Navy who have let a Chinese submarine penetrate our aircraft carrier defense fleet off the China Sea, and we're just shocked. San Diego, Shane, on the submarine issue. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, Michael. It was not a victory at sea. It was a wake-up call. First, there's three ways now that you can detect a submarine. Passive sonar, meaning just listening out in the ocean. And three, I guess, or the third one is to, when it pops up near your ship. But the most important one is active sonar, sitting down and ping, and that should, that should give you an indication of where the sub is at. Now,
Shane, wait a minute. The Americans were shocked by it, and one NATO officer said the effect was as big a shock as the Russians launching Sputnik. This is one of the most embarrassing moments in the history of the United States Navy, all under George Bush, master auctioneer of America's principal attributes. The man is selling this country off lock, stock, and barrel. The man has suggested that the Admiral of the U.S. Navy go to China, and he's there now, inviting the Chinese military aboard our ships, and this happens. How do we make sense of this?
I don't know, Mr. Savage. I don't know. Now, with the sonar, who do we have to blame for this? If you remember back in the summer, off the coast of Hawaii, we wanted to use sonar, but the environmentalists were up in arms because it would harm the marine mammals. Now, if this happens to be because of that, who do we have to blame?
George Bush. He's the commander-in-chief. The buck stops there. The man is the most incompetent commander-in-chief in the history of this country, and it's time America had a wake-up call to what danger we're in. Thank you for the call. There's nobody else to blame. American diplomats are demanding to know why the submarine, the Chinese submarine, was shadowing the U.S. fleet, while Beijing pleads ignorance and dismisses the affair as a coincidence. But analysts believe that Beijing is sending a message to America and the West saying that we have a rapidly growing military capability and you can do nothing about it. Now, the Song-class submarine, they own 13 of them. They're very quiet. They're very hard to detect. They're diesel electric. They're older technology. They're not nuclear. And in fact, they run in electric motors, and they were able to pop up in the middle of our aircraft carrier fleet. What does that tell you about the United States military today under the Commander-in-Chief George Bush, who is in fact the most incompetent Commander-in-Chief in American history? Mark my words. If there is a future, historians will note he was the worst Commander-in-Chief in history. I say, well, how could you say that? You're feeding the Democrats. Listen to me. Listen to me, all you stupid Bush bots. Listen carefully. Listen carefully. The people who are against the war in Iraq have a good point. Why should this thing have dragged on for 5 years? World War II was consummated in quicker time. The answer is because Bush's strategy is all wrong. It's all about strategy. If you study the history of military affairs, even as an amateur, you'll find out that it's always about strategy. It's almost always about strategy. Certainly weaponry has an awful lot to do with it. But if you have one commander who is outmanned and outgunned, but he's smarter and he can play a better chess game, he will usually beat the bigger army with the better weapons. Right now, the insurgency, so-called, the terrorists, have beaten us and beaten us and beaten us because we have a moron as a strategist. Now, you may say, well, you're wrong, Savage, because the number of detonations are down and IEDs are down. Yeah, okay, fine. That's for now. They'll figure out another way to set the bombs off. He did everything wrong, and I don't have the time to go into what experts are saying should have been done from the beginning. The fact of the matter is no war in history has been fought like this. You conquer most of the army, And then you let the Republican Guard throw away their uniforms and blend into the civilian population. And then you have to fight them in the alleyways of Baghdad and Samarra and the other towns and cities of Iraq because they realized they couldn't beat you on the battlefield, but they could beat you in a door-to-door campaign. They can wear you down through a war of attrition. Let me tell you, in my book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, which I published a few years ago, I open the book by saying, I pray this does not come to pass, but this Iraq war could be the greatest military blunder in American history. Why did I say that? Because I added things up. I said, wait a minute now. Iran is largely a nation of Shiite Muslims. The Iraqis were ruled by a minority of Sunni Muslims, dictatorial monsters under Saddam Hussein. But they kept the Shiite majority in control, in check. And I said, what we did by toppling Saddam was free up the Shiites. I said, now let's go a step further in history. What will happen if this goes bad is that we'll see the emergence of an ancient Persia. Ancient Persia, after all, was Iraq and Iran combined, along with Kuwait and several other territories or countries by today's globe. And I said, what this Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, has done here is undermine the greatest military on earth with a greater strategy, because we have morons at Foggy Bottom in the State Department who have made one blunder after another. Right now, they want Israel to commit suicide and give back the West Bank to the Palestinian murderers with the idea that they're going to suddenly lay down their arms and do what they've never done, which is suddenly dance the horror with the Jews. They're never going to dance the horror till the last Jew is dead. And yet the State Department, under that school mom, piano-playing, swimming, lifeguard moron from hell, Condoleezza Rice, wants the Jews to commit suicide so that she can go back to Stanford. I'll be right back. Is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. We could talk about, you want my opinion on Pakistan and Bhutto, the most corrupt woman in the world, being put forward by the media, Benazir Bhutto. Oh, poor woman, Democrat, coming back, picked on by the evil military of Pakistan. Her family has piled up tens of millions in Swiss and Dubai bank accounts. She comes from one of the most corrupt families in Pakistani history, and yet she's being presented by Wolf Blitzer and the other know-nothings as a poor, innocent woman who simply wants free and fair elections in her homeland of Pakistan. It's a very complicated story, but a very dangerous one. And frankly, our dear friend, the general, Musharraf, was the best friend we've ever had in that country and the best friend we ever could have, considering the situation as it is right now. It's an out-of-control situation to begin with, and we can make it much worse than it is. Nuclear weapons in both Pakistan and India, the loss of control in Islamabad, because this greedy, corrupt woman, Bhutto, comes back after 8 years in exile and demands a parade from the airport, invites a predictable terrorist attack, and all of a sudden the suicide attack on our convoy demonstrates her own demagogic mania. She loses dozens of her own security guard. It shows you how cynical she is, how corrupt she is, and how dangerous the situation in Pakistan is. But there's another element of it. Pakistan is the biggest mistake of British colonialism ever made. It also shows you that in history, through long-term history, Gandhi turns out to be the biggest meddler and the biggest crank in the history of pacifism. It was Gandhi's meddling, Gandhi's creation of Pakistan, that at the outset caused a million deaths. When they put the Muslims in one part of what was then India and created a Pakistan for Muslims only, 1 million people died at that time. So it just shows you again that liberalism is not only a mental disorder, but do-gooders will always cause death and misery wherever they are. The left wing will never even learn from their own mistakes. Pakistan was created by the ultimate do-gooder, Gandhi, and now we have Pakistan, an out-of-control Muslim state with nuclear weapons.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Driving through terrific storms, task forces of the Pacific Fleet roam the seas about Japan's homeland, steadily cutting down her remaining power to wage war. Sure of their superior strength, carrier forces boldly attack Tokyo. It's dirty going in these winter gales, but through storm or calm, they're out to cut the enemy's lifeline. Planes warm up for a hazardous takeoff through wind and rain. Over the target, they go in for the kill. Navy combat cameramen filmed these dramatic scenes of the attack on the heart of Japan. A strike that first hit Tokyo in the early morning hours when her armament plants were buzzing with industry. This is what the boys call the Mitcher Shampoo.
Thank you for the jingoistic World War II newsreel of attacks, like it was just a turkey run and everyone had a good time and the boys came home and had clinked beers and no one got hurt. That was the jingoism of World War II, and it was a much different story. It was a man-to-man fight, virtually came down to suicide missions by and large, whether you know it or not. Most of the missions were suicide missions, and the boys knew it, and they were willing to die for their country. I mean, that's the reality of it. It's so different from the newsreel picture and the, you know, Why We Fight series. We needed them to bolster the country needed it to bolster its morale. There's no question, compared to the pinkos we have today putting out one anti-American, anti-military story after another. And the most cynical, by the way, are the CNN people, as you would expect, who say saluting our heroes, and every hero they show is someone either without legs or dead. They never show a combat hero who's alive with all of his limbs. God forbid the... To them, the only good hero is a dead hero or a mutilated hero. But that's what you'd expect from the communist left. This is the Savage Nation. Many topics are on the table, including the microcephalic libs in the media, particularly the microcephalic so-called comedians like Jon Stewart and Colbert and Leno and Letterman, who are suddenly silent because the guys who write every line for them, making them sound so utterly smart, are on strike. The writers are on strike, so the puppets are off. Talk radio has no writers, by the way. I don't. I have no writers. I'm the writer. And most of it's made up on the spot. The most difficult of all entertainment and commentary forms in the world is live talk radio. I want you to understand what I'm saying to you. This is the most difficult media in the entire world. Very few people can do this well, which is why comedians go in the business and go out of the business. And they can't last because they're used to laugh lines written by others. You give them a show, and what they do is they babble on and on with no substance, and the people don't want to hear it. Time is too short, choices are too great, and the country is in a terrible state of affairs. It's a terrible state of affairs we're in right now. The Republicans have destroyed the Republican Party because there was no beef inside the buns, so to speak, except for a fellow who went into a bathroom stall, and of course he got called out for that. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. That wasn't bad, made up on the spot. Not bad at all, not bad at all. Let's go to the callers. KNEW, San Francisco. Fred, you're on the Savage Nation.
Norman Mailer had these eccentricities that I kind of feel underlined, at least a great writer or a great thinker. Notably, he liked the box for some reason, he associated himself with Muhammad Ali, and he had a boxing tournament amongst movie stars and writers. He read.
I know. Boxing obsessed him, but that's because he probably had deep-seated insecurities and always had to show everybody how tough he was.
Well, that's interesting. Then the other thing, he hated to use a typewriter or a PC. He wrote all of his books with a pen or a pencil.
Well, that's okay. He grew up in that time. I'm not saying he was a bad writer, but he was not a great writer, Fred. Even by his own analysis, he wasn't a great writer.
I see.
Let me start again. I'm not knocking him and saying he was not a writer of some renown, but he was not a great writer as he pretended to be. In fact, in the last years of his life, he said he wasn't a great writer. He tried his best, but he wasn't. But look at his book, The Naked and the Dead. And as I said to you, not so jokingly, he really was a naked red. I mean, you can't argue with that. The guy was a darling of the left.
Yeah, and he was a left-winger, and also, you give him credit for The Voice. I think The Voice was a clone of the Berkeley Barb, was it not? And the guy that invented the Berkeley Barb and its advertisements, that's what really, he got the idea for The Voice.
Yep. Well, he created the Village Voice with a guy named Daniel Wolfe, and the Village Voice, of course, specialized in selling free and easy sex with dogs, if necessary, and the use of drugs. I mean, what social good has the Village Voice ever done? Everything in the article, everything in the newspaper was about anti-family, anti-American, anti-religion. You know, if it feels good, do it in the road. So I was never a fan of the Village Voice. But anyway, thanks for the call. But he himself said he wasn't a great... What I don't understand is here's a guy, Norman Mailer, who shot his first wife, trying to imitate shooting the apple out of her mouth kind of thing. Got a parole for a convicted murderer who came out and killed somebody within 2 weeks. And yet he's glorified by the left as some great macho dude. Why? Because he was a lifetime naked red. There's no other reason. If you're a naked red, they love you. If you're a naked red, they support you. If you're a naked red, they glorify you. If you're a borders language culture person, the reds in the media will destroy you. They'll do everything they can to run you into the ground and lie about you. And that's all I want to say about it. Oh, no, one last line, because this was new to me. I didn't know that Norman Mailer was only a cook in Occupy Japan. By his book, The Naked and the Dead, which was a novel about a 13-man platoon fighting the Japanese on a Pacific atoll, I thought he was a war hero. Little did I know he was only a cook in Occupy Japan. That's okay. It makes him a greater storyteller. That's all that's important, is that he was able to bamboozle the Republic, come back suddenly, he's a war combat hero. It's the same thing with the mock boxing, don't you understand? I love boxing, but I don't pretend to be a fighter. He loved boxing and pretended to be a fighter. I guarantee a real fighter could have knocked him on his behind with one backhand. They could have backhanded him across the ring. That's the difference here. It was all hype. That's all. That's the whole story. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We saw last week that the far left of the Democrat Party and the media tried to sink the nomination of Attorney General Michael Mukasey. They failed. But it's another example of the media conspiracy to try and make Bush look bad at any cost and to undermine this administration. I have Cliff Kincaid from the group Accuracy and Media on the line to tell us what they try to do. Cliff, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on.
Why were liberal Democrats so determined to get Attorney General Michael Mukasey to declare waterboarding a form of torture before he was confirmed to his post?
I think the liberals were trying to set Bush up for possible impeachment charges or prosecution. They wanted Mukasey to declare waterboarding to be torture because they knew that President Bush had authorized waterboarding for some top al-Qaeda terrorists. So in their warped view, if they got Mukasey on record saying waterboarding was torture, then if he became Attorney General, perhaps he could lay the groundwork for prosecuting Bush, or at least to be forced to appoint an independent or special counsel to do the job. This was all a political maneuver to try to destroy the Bush presidency, especially during an election year. And this has been fed by the extreme left fringe elements of the Democratic Party, who, of course, want Bush impeached, they want Cheney impeached, they want Rumsfeld impeached. I mean, you name it, they're going after it. And unfortunately for the Democrats, the whole thing really backfired because Mukasey stuck to his guns, saying he wasn't going to say one way or the other whether waterboarding was torture because he didn't have access to all the facts about it. And so they eventually, with a few Democratic defections, had to confirm him. So the whole thing really backfired on them.
So what was the undermining game plan of the libs?
They were, of course, threatening not to confirm him if he didn't declare, without access to the fact, that waterboarding was torture. But he stuck to his guns. He said, look, I can't say one way or the other. And, of course, I understand that. He was up for a position. He didn't have all the facts in terms of classified memos and so forth. But the truth is that waterboarding is not torture. And we know that it has been successful. We know based on press reports that waterboarding was used against the top al-Qaeda mastermind of 9/11, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and that it broke him, that he was forced to confess to numerous other plots against Americans that apparently were stopped. And while this whole debate, quote-unquote, was going on, you had a number of Democrats, or those leaning that way, saying that the liberal Senate Democrats pressing the case against Mukasey were really overplaying their hand and that they risked looking like pacifists in the war on terror. So this is where it eventually went. The liberals had a game plan. They thought they were going to trap Mukasey. They thought they were going to, therefore, trap President Bush, but it ended up backfiring on them.
Why did the leftists focus so much on waterboarding when real torture is going on in North Korea and other places today?
It is strange. It's strange that they would focus in on a technique like that. They keep talking about it as if it's self-evident that waterboarding or making somebody feel like they're about to drown is torture, when numerous people have said they've undergone procedure and that while it is horrifying and scary, that it doesn't leave any permanent physical or psychological damage. But it has been, according to the report, an effective technique to use against these al-Qaeda terrorists in order to try to save American lives. This was the issue, though, that numerous left-wing Bush bashers in the cable network MSNBC kept harping on relentlessly and relentlessly, people like Keith Olbermann and Dan Abrams. But the fact is that the technique was not, in and of itself, illegal. Waterboarding has never been found to be illegal by the Congress itself. And if the Congress wants to write a law making that determination, they can do so. But they haven't. They've got a couple bills up there, one introduced by Senator Joe Biden, one introduced by Senator Ted Kennedy, who knows something about water torture. But those bills have very few Democratic co-sponsors, and they're going nowhere.
Why specifically did the left wing's plan fail?
I think because it looked like they were becoming weak in the war on terror and that they wanted to deny U.S. authorities a proven technique that was effective in breaking down these al-Qaeda terrorists. Plus, some of these characters on the left just look completely ridiculous and hypocritical in continuing to harp on it. I mean, somebody like Keith Olbermann gave this hysterical commentary suggesting this was all part of a plot involving Mukasey and Bush in order to protect Bush from impeachment or prosecution. Turns out Olbermann got his facts wrong. He'll never apologize for that. And then it looks so crazy and patently ridiculous for somebody like Ted Kennedy to be up there complaining about alleged water torture, considering what he did in the scandal known as Chappaquiddick. I mean, this even led to a Kelly cartoon, a pretty funny cartoon showing a Kennedy trying to lecture Mukasey about how horrible this waterboarding was, and Mukasey responding something to the effect that, well, we'll make sure we never put anybody in the backseat of your car again, referring to the fact that Kennedy in the Chappaquiddick incident had left a party with a young girl. The car went off a road into a pond. Kennedy escaped to sit out there trying to contemplate his political future, while his companion, Mary Jo Kopechne, in the Chappaquiddick scandal, was there at the bottom of the submerged car trying to escape and save her life. He didn't do anything to save her, but of course he ended up saving his political future. And the point that we make in our column at AIM.org is that this made Kennedy out to be a complete fool, complaining about the waterboarding of terrorists. When he had left a young girl to die in the bottom of his submerged car, that he didn't lift a finger to go back in there and try to save her while she was gasping her last breath. And when you got political cartoons drawing that connection, you know, that looks pretty bad for the Democrats, too. I think, really, that was a factor in there eventually, some of them dropping their opposition to Mukasey and voting for his confirmation.
So what is Kennedy trying to do with waterboarding now? He should know an awful lot about water and boarding.
He's just trying to get the CIA to quit using the practice. Now, there's no evidence they have used it lately. From what we can tell based on press reports, it may have been used perhaps three times against top al-Qaeda terrorists like this guy, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and it worked. It worked. It got some information out of them, which was essential in trying to stop their terrorist plots against Americans. And using the waterboarding technique, got the information out of them, and apparently helped save some American lives. But Kennedy doesn't want that technique used at all. And so that's the import of his legislation. Plus, Joe Biden has a similar bill, a little bit broader, again, trying to stop any use by any U.S. officials in the CIA or the military from ever using this technique. And it's just denying us a proven technique that has proved to save American lives. And I think that's why you've got just a few actual liberal Democrats signing on to either bill.
Socialist intelligentsia has defamed the name of Senator Joe McCarthy for 50 years, but even those claiming to be conservative often say that McCarthy went too far and you're being a McCarthyite. But my guest today, M. Stanton Evans, has written a book, Blacklisted by History, which is about the real record of Joe McCarthy. Mr. Evans, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on your program.
Why has Joe McCarthy been trashed by two generations of journalists and historians?
Well, a very good question that is hard to answer in a brief fashion, but I'll try. Joe McCarthy was going against a long-standing problem that needed to be dealt with but had not been dealt with. And when he came along, he was a threat to the self-interest of a lot of influential people, not only those who had been involved in subversion, and certainly was a threat to them, but even more important to the people who had let that happen, who had been asleep at the switch when there was heavy infiltration of our government by communists and Soviet agents, and they really hadn't done much about it. And they were very much afraid that they would pay a strong political price if the facts about this became known to the American public. And they developed a strong ideological interest in denying that this problem existed. And that has permeated many parts of the academy and the media.
Was Joe McCarthy right? Were there large numbers of communists in the government in the 1950s?
Yes, there were, and mostly in the 40s, really. What happened was that in the atmospherics of World War II, and we have to sort of think back to how different that was from what happened later, the Soviet Union was our ally against the Nazis. So nobody was really standing guard very carefully to prevent communists from getting into the government. And in fact, in some cases, they were actively recruited. this particularly developed into a problem in certain temporary agencies in the war, one of which was called the Office of Strategic Services, another one called the Office of War Information. These were agencies thrown together after Pearl Harbor to manage things during the war. At the end of the war, they were abolished, and a lot of communists and subversives and Soviet agents had infiltrated these temporary units. And at the end of the war, these agencies were merged into the State Department, and that's where most of the McCarthy cases came from. And now that we have the information on his cases and the FBI files, we can see that that was the sequence that developed, and the problem was indeed very real, and McCarthy knew it, and McCarthy had the data that went to show that it had been covered up.
How did the Venona papers change what we know about McCarthy?
The Venona papers were tremendously important in that these were documents dating from the same period, World War II, in which the American intelligence specialists had intercepted the cables from Moscow's center to their agents here in the United States, dealing with things such as infiltrating the government and influencing policy in favor of the Soviet interest, and named a lot of people, such as, say, Lachlan Curry, who was a high official in the Roosevelt White House, who was a Soviet asset there, and many other people who were involved in this infiltration. These cables were knowledge that had been withheld from the public for 50 years until they were released in 1995. And if one checks those data against the McCarthy cases, you'll see over and over again the same people popping up. And I have a chapter in my book called He Had in His Hand, which takes 10 McCarthy cases and tracks them through the Venona documents, and you can see that they vindicate what he was contending at the time.
Well, how did McCarthy's actions affect the ability of communists to infiltrate our government and steal our security secrets?
What happened? It really went through a number of phases, Michael. The first thing that happened was that there was a huge backlash against him and a tremendous controversy that developed because of his charges, for the reasons that we talked about a moment ago. But after he had been around a while, things started moving in the direction he was urging. And a lot of these people that we're talking about were, in fact, forced out of the government. And people, particularly in the State Department, who had been targets of his, a man named John Stuart Service, another one named John Carter Vincent, and others, several others, who were his main targets, who'd been involved with policy toward China, were forced out of the government. And that was the so-called reign of terror that we read about in some of the textbooks. And so McCarthy kind of won that first round. But then there was a long-playing resistance to McCarthy that started up while he was still alive and then intensified even more so after he was dead, which turned all this around and portrayed him as the villain and his people he was contending against as victims.
What was the real reason McCarthy was censured by the U.S. Senate?
You know, Michael, I don't really know the answer to that question. I ponder that at the end of my book. I'm not fully sure. The answer comes really in two parts. One is that the Democrats, who were suffering badly from McCarthy and many of his adversaries in the Senate on the Democratic side, were defeated in the 1950 and 1952 elections. So the Democrats were ready to vote against him as a block, and they did, with the exception of John F. Kennedy, who did not vote against him, who was in the hospital when the vote happened. The really decisive issue was not the Democrats, it was the Republicans. And what happened was that there were people very antagonistic to McCarthy in the Eisenhower administration who worked on Eisenhower's thinking very much to McCarthy's detriment, and these elements within the Republican administration joined in the censure effort. And that was what was critical. The Republican votes in the Senate were then divided exactly in half. Senators who pro-McCarthy, anti-McCarthy. Senators who would have supported McCarthy against a Democratic president would not support him against a Republican president. So when you add the Democratic votes to the half the Republican votes, that's where the censure vote came from.
Why are so many liberals, like their leftist propaganda film Good Night and Good Luck, so focused on smearing McCarthy's reputation even 50 years after his death?
A very good question, and again, I'm not sure I know the answer, but I'm glad you mentioned that film. I deal with that film in my book. It's a very salient example of disinformation about McCarthy, not only negative in attitude, but conveys notions that are factually incorrect. One of the cases dealt with in that movie, which had been dealt with originally by Edward R. Murrow himself, and the movie is about Edward R. Murrow, was a case of a woman named Annie Lee Moss, who was a McCarthy witness, who was accused of being a communist. Murrow and the movie treat her more or less as a victim of McCarthy, and she's so treated in all the history books. All of that is completely bogus. I got the FBI files on her, and I have a chapter about that whole subject, and everything that we've been told about that episode is an inversion of the truth that we now know because we have the FBI files. Why historians, journalists, entertainers like George Clooney insist on purveying this disinformation when the facts are so clearly the other way around, I cannot answer. They would have to answer that question. This problem was not only serious back in the 40s, very serious, but it was covered up. And this cover-up then sort of has extended into the historical treatments, as we've discussed. And let me give you just one example. I think we all know about the Hiss-Chambers case, in which Whitaker Chambers, the former communist courier, broke with the Communist Party, went to the government and told them about communists and Soviet agents who were on the federal payroll at that time. And this developed into a big fight between Chambers and the principal person he named as a Soviet agent and communist, Alger Hiss. This became a big issue before the House Committee on Un-American Activities in 1948. And the question was what would be done about this by the administration then in power under Truman. And if you look at the documents of that, you'll see that the entire thrust of the Truman White House and Justice Department was to indict for perjury, not Alger Hiss, but Chambers. They were going to indict Chambers and send him to prison for perjury, when in fact the perjurer was Alger Hiss, but they had no interest in showing that. They wanted to discredit Chambers. And fortunately, the House Committee on American Activities was on the job and got that stopped. But that's how bad the situation was, so it was very serious indeed.
Mr. Evans, thanks for being here and setting the record straight.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's been a pleasure being with you. You have a great program.
It is the Savage Nation. I've given you, let's see, 3 new personal stories, 1 review, 2 fresh interviews, and commentary about the events of the day. Not a bad day. Not a bad day in talk radio. And there's many things you've learned. Many of them are on michaelsavage.com, which I strongly advise you visit to follow up, particularly on the Chinese sub popping up in the midst of our battle group, supposedly catching our leaders by surprise. I guess they're the last to know that they have their pants down. I guess they were surprised by the millions of illegal aliens from Mexico. They were surprised that there might be terrorists in Dubai who wanted them to turn over the port security to them. They were surprised that amongst the millions of illegal aliens, there might be, let's say, 1 or 2 murderers, drug dealers, or criminals. They're surprised by everything. But we, the people, are not surprised, are we? Some of the personal stories were about my visiting the San Francisco Bay Bridge to review the actual damage to the structure. I mean, Feinstein and Boxer are, of course, and Pelosi are grandstanding it regarding the oil spill in the bay and blaming everybody, which, of course, there should be blame to the ship owners and particularly to the bar pilot. But they really ought to concentrate on the great engineering that prevented any damage from being done to the bridge itself. Astounding. As I went around that bridge in my boat yesterday and reviewed it, you can't believe. I'm sorry I didn't bring my digital camera. Maybe I'll do it next week. It just tore the heck out of the barrier built around the pylon itself. Remember, hit by an oil tanker in the fog, fully laden oil tanker, and the bridge doesn't get damaged. Let's talk about the great engineering that went into the building of the Bay Bridge back in the 1930s before the EEOC imposed, let us say, certain quotas upon the engineering profession, quotas upon the construction trades. And, of course, there were no illegal aliens building the bridge at that time, incidentally. I know it's embarrassing for you liberals to realize, but if you try to build a Bay Bridge today, A, it would probably take you 100 years till you got through the red tape called the U.S. government and the EEOC, and B, the two ends of the bridges wouldn't meet. 1-800-449-8255, Sacramento. Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm sure it's hard to do talk radio, but you found a secret. I mean, after all, where else can you hear about vignettes about Longfellow Avenue or the midgets in Pocono Mountains or your mother feeding you three times a day? I mean, those are the types of stories we want to hear about.
So you mean it's only that has nothing to do with my keen political analysis? That has nothing to do with it? It's all just about my mother's cooking?
No, we like to hear about your keen political analysis because you know that is number one, and your listeners love it. But
yeah, and let me say this, Jim. That's an important point. I'm not trying to be a sarcastic guy from the Bronx. Let me explain something. This is very important. If all these years, over all these years, my analysis was not keen and accurate, then all the personal stories in the world wouldn't be listened to. It is only because my listeners respect me and like me politically that they're willing to listen to the personal stories and relax with them. But I myself know that I will not relax to anyone's ha-ha stories unless I give them my litmus test, my political litmus test. And that goes back to something I said earlier today. Take a look, and it's such an important story. It is such an important story. The writers, the TV writers are on strike. All of a sudden, the genius Jon Stewart is silent. The genius Colbert, silent. Letterman, silent. Leno, silent. Why are they silent? Because they're puppets. They're puppets. The writers make them sound smart. And that's why they have no real following. They have an audience. Yeah, they have audiences for sure. But they have no devoted following. I have an audience that's devoted. Do you understand the difference? I hope so. Las Vegas, Dennis, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
World War II, Michael. I think there's a tendency to exaggerate the World War II threat to America and to the Allies. I used to teach U.S. history. And basically, in the Japanese sphere, which was Pacific, we basically had them whipped after Midway. We destroyed their navy at Midway, and the Admiralty of Japan knew that it was over. Yamamoto knew it was over.
But wait, let's slow down. But it wasn't a cakewalk, was it?
No, it was a...
And it wasn't a turkey shoot, was it? And many of our boys knew they were flying suicide missions. And it was only a quirk of history and happenstance that we won the Battle of Midway because of the reloading of the bombs for aerial combat as opposed to torpedo strikes or vice versa. You know that, and I know that. There were many, many instances that could have gone the other way, Dennis. Also, how do you account for the fact that they attacked us at Pearl Harbor, hoping to strike out our aircraft carrier fleet, which happened to be at sea? It only took out the battleships and cruisers, which was bad enough. But all of our aircraft carriers were spared that attack at Pearl Harbor. My point is that it was chance, luck, and the men willing to die for America that had us win World War II. Let's go to Europe. I'm no expert, but let's take the Battle of Anzio. We land at Anzio. We catch the Germans by surprise to try to encircle them at Cassino. What happens? The general is a timid man. He takes 9 or 11 days to fortify his position. In those 9 to 11 days, the Germans get ready for a counterstrike and take our 35,000 men and reduce them to chop meat over the next 3 months. No, it was not an immediate and easy victory, Dennis. A lot of sacrifice, a lot of luck, and frankly, it was touch and go in the beginning. You know that. The socialists, the liberals, the Democrats of the 1930s, do you know that they sank our ships in the 1930s saying they were no longer needed? Do you know that, Dennis? You're a historian.
Actually, they scuttled a lot, most of our Navy in the 20s. It happened.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The liberals of the 30s and the 20s, if you want to go back even further, were very much like Ted Kennedy, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, and Nancy Pelosi today. They were saying, there's no war with Islamofascism. That's a construct of the right wing. It's a construct. There's no war. The Islamofascists don't mean us any harm. And they're trying at every turn to undermine our military, undermine the war machine, and tell us that if only we all sit down together, all will be well. The very same rubbish went on in the 30s, and were it not for Churchill, for example, in Britain, who was building up the military, and some of our politicians today who understand the threat of the Islamo-fascists, and, by the way, the future threat of China, we'd have no military whatsoever, Dennis. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Clinton, Clinton on WIND in Chicago. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
It's an honor to talk to you. I'm a hardworking father of three children, and I'm extremely concerned about the direction that our country is going. And my question is this to you, sir. Who, in your opinion, in our political landscape today, are those, and where are those good and honorable people that are willing and are ready to stand up and lead this country back?
All right, General Petraeus would be one. There was another general who was roundly condemned because he dared say that homosexuals shouldn't be in the military serving openly. They ran him out of the military for that. Do you remember his name? Peter Pace. There are two men who should run for office as far as I'm concerned. I don't know whether they could win. I doubt that the Republican machine would back two generals, but they're certainly better than the Beltway bandits that we have running. Thanks for the call. And they're not the only ones. Believe me, below them in the ranks, there are some very good men. But there's two examples. I have hope that men will emerge that can save America, which is turning into a culture of diminished men without any leadership qualities whatsoever. Chicago, Robert, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm a conservative. I served in Vietnam. Mr. Kincaid is wrong. Waterboarding is torture. We were not allowed to use waterboarding during the Vietnam War. The Vietnamese used it on the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese. The Nazis used it during World War II. Klaus Barbie, that was one of his favorite techniques, waterboarding.
All right, hold on a minute. Now, let me say this. How would, okay, Islamo-fascist terrorist has set off a ticking bomb in Chicago. It's going to go off in 5 minutes. The FBI has caught him. They have him in a dark room. Wolf Blitzer is asleep. He's eating a bagel somewhere. How would you break the information out of him? What would you use?
Torture. You can break them without torture. They've done it for years and years.
How? How? Years. How? How? I'm asking you how, though. I'm not arguing with you. I'm asking how.
Threaten to kill them. You can threaten to kill them. You want to threaten them? Threaten them.
There's nah, no Robert, I disagree with you. These guys are as hard as iron. Mainly, they'll spit in your face, and you know it. There's only one thing that scares them, and that's death. They're all liars. They say they're ready to die. I don't believe it.
Savage.